News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, we got a full show for you today, like I said, coming up at 3 o'clock, if all things go well, because he is still on the floor of the Senate right now, State Senator Shea Shelnut, who is arguably one of the more conservative members of the Republican caucus in both the House and the Senate. He and I worked together for 8 years, and we like to joke, and I'll probably say it when he comes on the air with me, but there was a whole group of us that were, you know, we sort of considered ourselves the more conservative members of the body, just, you know, we just did, and we most of us sat on the back row intentionally. It's kind of like we all sat on the back row. Sometimes we were the back row nose, sometimes we were the back row hecklers, and sometimes we were the back row getter done, but you know, whatever the case may be. Almost the entire back row decided not to run for re-election except for Shea. It was crazy. Now, he's not been down there forever. He's not like a perpetual candidate. He got elected in 2010, same as I did, but he stayed one more term. So, yeah, the whole back row was, what was it? It was Rusty Glover, me, Bill Holtzclaw, Paul Sanford, Shea Shelnut, Gerald Allen. Okay, Gerald's still there too. Dick Brubaker. And all of us except for Gerald Allen and Shea Shelnut decided not to run again. And so I was talking to Shea on the phone, I think yesterday, and I said, man, you need us back down there. He goes, y'all left me with all this anyway. So it's funny. I'm hoping Shea can make it on. We've got him scheduled for 3 o'clock. I look forward to having my friend, State Senator Shea Shelnut, on the air with us to talk about some victories they had today. Good stuff. Good stuff happened. But listen, I got to tell you too, if you have been, you know, sort of tracking the way we do this show, then you know that I resource the show pretty heavy. I've got three stacks of paper right here for each part of the Triple Dipper, each one resourced heavily. I've got over 50 pages of articles and things that I've highlighted and gotten ready for today. And when I do that, I go to various news sources, some of which you might expect, some you might not expect. But one of the ones that you can expect that I go to every day is 1819news.com. 1819news.com. It's named for the year that Alabama became a state, but I know the folks over there. I was in a meeting with them yesterday. 1819 News has burst onto the scene as of about 6 months ago. They are kicking it right now. They have become one of the most reliable sources for good, solid news, good, straight reporting in the state of Alabama, period, bar none. And when I say that, I don't say it lightly. I mean, they literally came on board, good, solid, conservative folks, but they also said, we're not going to do the news by opinion. We're going to do the news by the news, and we'll have opinions separated out so you can read opinions separately. I think it's a great model. It used to be called that, you know, news on a regular basis. Not so often now. Like you go to AL.com or some of the others, most of the times you got to read between the lines. You know, when you see that reporter's name, it's going to be skewed. Whatever. Not 1819 News. Check them out. 1819news.com. I encourage you to use them yourself. 1819news.com. By the way, I will point out, too, our podcast is kicking. I just had somebody a minute ago that I was texting back and forth with about the podcast. We are just about to hit 37,000 downloads of the podcast. Birdman is going to be getting me some stats pretty soon so we can see if California is still our second biggest audience. But I love that. Every bit of that stuff, you know, our listen live, like if you're going outside the range of our AM/FM, you can listen live by streaming. I was telling somebody this morning, they said, how do I get your show? I live on the backside of Sand Mountain. Well, I can go to rightsideradio.org, stream it on any device or your computer. Rightsideradio.org is where you find all things related to Right Side Radio. You can find, you know, all of our sponsors on there. You can find the things that Copper and I both write, the weekly op-eds that we put out that get published, you know, statewide. You can find our podcasting. You can find, you know, a button to the Right Side store where you can buy coffee mugs and t-shirts and Right Side Radio socks, which is one of my favorite things. It's all right there at rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. All right. So I just, while I was talking, because I'm like a super double tasker, I guess, I literally went over to Twitter because you can go to, if you haven't ever done this, by the way, you can follow what's happening like in the State House or wherever. You can actually watch them online if you want to. But if you just want to track where a bill is or what's happening on the floor of the House or Senate, you just use the hashtag AL Politics. Hashtag AL Politics will pretty much take you to most of the reporters who are working the press rooms inside the State House covering what's happening. And we've got any number of things that are happening. Like one right now is tweeting out that it is expected that the legislature will actually adjourn the session for good today. Now, there was talk of them holding one day in reserve in case they had to come back and, you know, override a gubernatorial veto. But I think right now they just won out. expected right now that sometime late this afternoon, early evening, they will do what's called adjourning sine die, which is Latin for I think it is finished or thereabouts. But anyway, they will adjourn sine die and be done. I like to always joke that the state is always safer when the legislature is not in session. Well, that's certainly been the truth here lately. We're going to come back with that being the theme, number one of the Triple Dipper, in just a minute. Whose state house is this? I'll cover down on some things that have happened, and then, like I said, top of the hour, State Senator Shea Shelnut should be calling in to give us some updates, too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. More breaking news in the world of politics. This just came out here in the last hour. The U.S. Senate has confirmed Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to take her place on the U.S. Supreme Court. So that has happened. And of course, all the headlines are, she'll be the first black woman on the Supreme Court of the United States. Well, yes, she will. She won't be the first liberal, though. But the very idea that she was selected with the very first selection criteria being her gender and her, you know, ethnicity. I look at that and think, that's not the way it's supposed to go. I mean, what if the next president came in and said, I intend to select the 51st white man? Well, everybody would freak out. So, I mean, I look at this and think this is, you get what you pay for, I guess. But the reality is, and I just saw that Tim James, who's going to be on the show tomorrow, by the way, Tim James will be here in the studio with me tomorrow afternoon. You might want to hear that. But Tim James has tweeted out, he says, before the left goes crazy congratulating Ketanji Brown Jackson on her appointment as the first black woman to SCOTUS, they might want to find a biologist to explain to her what that means. That's pretty funny. But yet it's not at the same time, because there you go. I mean, the very idea that someone who's going to sit on the Supreme Court looks at a U.S. senator who's asking her, can you define what a woman is, and says, no, I can't. And yet the criteria to select her was that she was a black woman. Okay. I mean, the easy answer would have been, well, you're looking at one, Senator. Why do you ask? But anyway, that's where we are. And yeah. All right, number one of the Triple Dipper. Let me move to that. Whose state house is this? Well, there are times when I wonder. In fact, another bill that flew under the radar that I've got to get into and just track. Somebody has sent me a text about it a few minutes ago, and I was not even tracking this bill. There's a bill that's maybe getting final passage even today. Well, it has to be today because they're ending up today. But a bill that received final passage that would take the dictates of the state health officer who is unelected and give them the full force and effect of law. Now, I'm hoping what they said was if the governor mandates it, but I still look at that and go, that's also not the role of the governor. The full force and effect of law should not be delegated. I mean, the drafting of law should not be delegated away by the legislature. It should be reserved to the legislature. The black letter law, the statutory law of this state, and truthfully, the provisions of the Constitution, which are voted on by the people, all of those come through the legislative process. Well, we have an unelected state health officer who made decisions for the last 2 years that put a lot of people in a bind. and has no accountability whatsoever because he is not selected by the governor. He's not selected by anyone. He's not confirmed by the Senate. He is selected by the medical association. You heard me. He's selected by the doctors who have their own association in Montgomery. That's how we have our state health officer. Why is that okay? I have no idea. In fact, I remember when my friend Parker Snyder, who's the one of the analysts at the Alabama Policy Institute, when he first researched that and told us about it, I looked at him and said, no. I was like, that can't be right. Go back and look at that again. He did, but he was right. Anyway, that bill happened. Well, with all the frustrations that we have right now, I will tell you this. There's a story in National Review came out today. Actually, yesterday. National Review. The title of it is "The GOP Remains the Only Party for Conservatives." All right. So if you're a conservative, if this show is where you dial in because you are like-minded in conservatism, and remember that being a conservative and being a Republican are not always the same thing. I say that a lot, but just keep that in mind. But if you're a conservative, where else do you go? I mean, the Democrat Party is certainly not the party of conservatism, and it's certainly not the party of things that we believe in. The Republican Party's platforms, at the very least, contain conservative policies. They just don't always act them out. Well, this article from National Review points out the history of how we gained the Republican Party. And it points out the fact that the Republicans actually sprung up out of the Whig Party because there was a great deal of dissatisfaction with the Whig Party. Talks about the fact that the Whigs became a national party in 1834 and then moves on down the line to the fact that after a number of years of dissatisfaction, after a number of years of feeling like the Whig Party no longer represented the values that it first set out to, then the Republican Party was formed in 1854. First had its first meeting in Wisconsin, named its first slate of candidates. There were some other smaller parties at the time, the Liberty Party, the Free Soil Party. But for the most part, the Republicans kind of came on like a storm. I mean, they came in hard and fast. And they became a national force in politics. So he points out that conservatives who were dissatisfied, and I am one, by the way, I'm extremely dissatisfied with the current state of Republican legislators at both the state and federal level. And I say that in a blanket sense. I mean, there are isolated pockets and people who I think are every bit as conservative as I am, and they are doing all they can to go against the tide. But they're in the minority. That being said, is there any chance of forming a third conservative party and making any kind of dent? Well, it points out that the old Free Soil Party and the Liberty Party got in there and kind of swung New York and Michigan elections in the 1840s. But could they really do that again today? We do have the one situation where Ross Perot, you know, got engaged in politics and came in there and sort of disrupted the flow. And there are some that believe that it was Ross Perot. It was not necessarily Bill Clinton. It was actually Ross Perot that created the situation where Bill Clinton cruised to victory and George H.W. Bush did not. But is there the possibility that conservatives could ever form a third party that in some way would have true force or impact? And at this point, I think no, not without a serious nationwide grassroots campaign and a lot of money. And so this particular article from National Review kind of concludes with the same thing. It says, like it or not, conservatives who want to accomplish anything in American politics in the next decade, will have no realistic choice but to work within the structure of the Republican Party. So here's the deal. Why did I bring that up? The whole section here is, whose state house is this? My point is this. I texted a friend of mine a little while ago who was very dissatisfied with a bill that was, you know, working its way through the last day of the legislature. And I said, we're playing whack-a-mole right now down in Montgomery. We are. They are still willing to pass Second Amendment and pro-life bills. They are not willing to be fiscally conservative and give you tax cuts. They are raising your taxes, and yet they are, you know, fighting for life. It's they've become fiscally irresponsible in some ways. I mean, they'll say they're balancing the budgets and all that. I get that. But for the most part, you are not seeing things come back to you in a fiscal sense. You're not seeing true downsizing of government. You're not seeing the reining in of executive overreach. If anything, you're seeing just the opposite. On social policies, depending on how today's debates go, it appears that we will have taken a stand on some things. We did have a special session last fall where they fought back against some COVID mandates from the federal government. We were one of the only states that did that. So it's a whack-a-mole. If you want to see consistency, I'm just going to encourage you right now. You have got to, right side ruffians, I'm talking to you, you have got to engage your elected officials, especially the Montgomery folks. Right here in this listening area, you do have some good ones. And I'm just going to tell you, you gotta, they are far more accessible than you would ever imagine. Truthfully, they are. All right. So it's the things that are happening right now in Montgomery. My friend Justin Bogie, who's the fiscal analyst at the Alabama Policy Institute, writing a piece this morning in 1819 News. He points out that the fiscal issues, they continue, man. He points out in his article that just came out, he says, the Alabama Senate shows how to make a bad bill even worse. That the Republicans in House Bill 138 took nearly all of the education budget's $1 billion revenue surplus, because we had a $1.3 billion revenue surplus. And rather than finding a means to give it back to people, to give tax credits to benefit the average taxpaying citizen, they put most of it back into government and a few port projects. Well, at the very least, though, one thing they did do, he said, was they took $200 million of that and they allocated it to paying off debt. Okay, that's good. And he points out, he says, not a huge victory, but it was something. You know, $200 million out of, what, $1.3 billion. But it was going to pay off a portion of the education budget's existing debt. Cool. Except when it got up to the Senate, it changed. For whatever reason, Senator Orr decided not to follow through on that, had it removed, and it appears that it has been concurred with by the House now, so the House re-agreed on that issue, and it went on. Yeah, there's that. How about this one? Also on 1819news.com, caught my attention because you've heard me talk about the gas tax multiple times. I mean, how many of you are paying more at the pump? Everybody's hand went up. We're all paying more at the pump. And a big part of that, 10 cents on the gallon of that, is because your current state legislature, the ones who got elected the last time we went to the polls, they all decided to raise your gas taxes. Well, State Senator Clyde Chambliss, who I do know, I worked with him when we were down there, State Senator Clyde Chambliss, who was one of the architects of what is now called the Rebuild Alabama Act, went on Jeff Poore's show yesterday and said, it's not good government to do away with the gas tax right now and to give all of us a break. It's not good government. It's not good government. I got news. It's real good government when you give back to the people. It's real good government when you spend less. It's real good government when you want to do something like, I don't know, give a tax break in the middle of a freaking recession. How about that? Clyde's Chambliss's comments, and I need to get him on the show so I can fuss at him in person, but Clyde's comments were, if we're going to be honest, we're also going to be honest with the gas tax. There's tremendous need there. Oh, there you go. Government needs this money. We need this. There's even more need than what the Rebuild Alabama Act can do. And to be dishonest and say, hey, we should just give all that back right now, that's not good government, in my opinion. Well, thank you, Clyde. I appreciate you harboring those funds and making sure that none of the surpluses you have in Alabama government can get back to the people. Like I said, we're playing whack-a-mole down in Montgomery. Other things are happening. Whose state house is this? Well, I'll cover more of that in a minute. We're going to take a break right now. When we get back, we'll finish up that segment and then hopefully go to the phones with State Senator Shea Shelnut at the top of the hour, who I believe has the opportunity to take a victory lap because he sponsored two of the most conservative pieces of legislation that puts Alabama on the same playing field as Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis' most recent bill. Yeah, that happened today. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. And liberals are freaking out in Montgomery right now because they just passed some legislation here a little while ago. I mean, I'm talking like right before the show started. There was a bill that was on transgender issues and the other on divisive concepts that Copper talked about yesterday, but kind of went a different direction here. The divisive concepts bill by itself has not made it back to the Senate floor. It may be because what happened was this. There was a bill, and I'm looking at an AL.com story. Yes, I really am looking at an AL.com story. But there was a bill to ban, or is a bill to ban medical treatments for transgender minors to help them transition, you know, by medical practitioners applying surgeries and hormone blockers and those kind of things. They can have really far-reaching effects, obviously. And I guess that goes without saying. They're designed to have far-reaching effects. However, they're being done on minors at a time when those minors can't make their own decisions. And the concern is that so often that gender dysphoria is something that happens with you know, kids occasionally. And to allow such a life-altering change to their bodies, things that can never be reversed, would be devastating if the gender dysphoria was not something that they wanted to maintain in their age of majority, past the age of 19. Anyway, all that to say, the bill came up today. It had already passed the Senate. It had been lingering in the House. There was some concern about whether they're even going to put it on the calendar, where they did, and they passed it. So I am shocked, happily shocked, and glad to see that after 3 years of working that bill, that it finally passed today. They called it the VCAP bill, which stands for the Vulnerable Child and Protection Act, I believe. And that literally says that you cannot apply those kind of life-altering transgender therapies on minors in the state of Alabama. And there's penalties for it. It literally holds doctors to account, and it could put their license at risk, if I'm not mistaken. And criminalize having done that. Now, that being said, it's not saying you can't believe a certain way. It's not saying you can't act out your beliefs in a certain way. What it's saying is doctors in Alabama will not be blocking the hormones of a child pre-puberty, and a doctor in Alabama will not be conducting a surgery that alters them forever. So there's that. However, another bill came up that I didn't know was going to see the light of day. I kind of doubted it. It's a transgender bathroom bill. I was actually the sponsor of a transgender bathroom bill some years ago when it first became a thing, and I got ridiculed statewide for daring to think that was an issue. And look what happens now, just what, 6 years later? Yeah. Anyway, that bill came up. Shay Shelnut, who is the sponsor of the other bill I talked about, the VCAP bill, Shay Shelnut took the House bill that had passed up to the Senate, went to the floor of the Senate and dropped an amendment on it that would also make that bill something that would ban the teachings of gender identity and gender fluidity and gender orientation in K through 5, just like the bill that was done already in Florida last week. That's big doings, y'all. That is huge. Well, guess what? It passed. All we're waiting on now to see what happens with that bill is that since it was changed in the Senate, it has to go back to concurrence for concurrence in the House. If they choose not to concur, the bill could die. If they choose to go to conference committee and work out some details, then that amendment might come off. But at the very least, the bill is alive. The bill is doubly as good as it was before. And the bill is now back in the House. If they simply concur, it goes to the governor for signature. And I suspect that she will sign it. I suspect that she knows she'd have to. So there's that. Other things that are happening right now, you might be interested to know that despite the fact that we are 50th in the nation in education, that a massive pay increase was given to for teachers. In the last minute, a change was made by the Senate to the education budget that will give upwards of a 21% pay increase for teachers with seniority. So if you've been teaching for 20 years, it could add as much as $8,000 to $9,000 a year to your salary. That's an amazing increase. And I question whether that was wise in an era in which we recognize that the current budget surpluses may not last. Do I think teachers should get paid more if we can? Certainly, if we can. Keep in mind, once you give that pay increase, 21%, you have to do it perpetually every year thereafter. All right, folks, we're going to see if my friend Shay Shonut can call in. If not, we'll continue on with this mode. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back.